This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. Hey everybody, this is episode number 82 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
And we are back. We actually took the week off last week because we were all so exhausted from Thanksgiving and Black Friday and everything else that comes along with it. So I just wanted to say thank you so much to our listeners for being patient with us while we take a week off to basically recover. You know, we're all about the self-care on this show. You know, we want to make sure that we're okay before we do anything else. And we certainly encourage our listeners to do the same. Speaking of taking great care of themselves, we have a woman of excellence this week. Her name is Jennifer Krotz. She is a young lady from Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and she played at GP Denver this past weekend, finished 8-1 on day one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No big. came back on day two and finished 201 out of 1,567 people. She was also the winner of Simone Aiken's Pay It Forward Challenge, which we're going to talk about a little bit later on the show. So she's going to receive a flight to any GP she wants next year in North America. If you do want to continue supporting her, you can find her on Twitter at Jen Krotz, J-E-N-C-R-O-T-T-S. Congratulations, Jennifer. Mm-hmm. And speaking of GP Denver, Hallie, you were there.
I was.
How was it?
It was amazing.
Good. Yeah.
So I was there doing coverage. I was not playing, though watching all the matches made me really want to play this format. And that's not what I was expecting going into this weekend. The big story of the weekend was that everyone seemed to think that Standard was solved. Everyone seemed to think that Blue White Flash and Black Green Delirium were the two best decks in Standard, and they were just miles, like head and shoulders above the rest. But this Red Green Aetherworks deck emerged, and suddenly all the pro players were playing it. And there were all these other interesting decks coming up. Like, I interviewed Ben Weitz and Pascal Maynard about their white blue Panharmonicon deck, which you may have seen Seth Manfield playing on camera. And that deck was right up my alley because you get to play Panharmonicon, you get to play tons of awesome creatures with Enter the Battlefield effects, like Cloudblazer and Reflector Mage and Spell Queller, and you get to do cool things with Drowner of Hope and Eldrazi Displacer to make tons and tons of mana. And I just thought the format was in a really great place. I haven't played Standard in a while now, but now I really want to because I was watching a lot of the games as they were happening this weekend, and they seemed so interactive. And I think that's a sign of a healthy Standard format where the games are really interactive, and it seems like no one's really ever out of a game. I was watching a lot of the games and seeing players in really difficult board positions. And every time in my head, I was thinking, well, they have outs to this. They have this, this, and this that they could possibly draw, or this that could possibly happen, or this person could miss on an Aetherworks Marvel and it could go in the other player's favor. So I actually really like where Standard is right now, and I'm looking forward to playing it on Magic Online this coming week.
Yeah, I was surprised by that as well. You know, I played in the Invitational this past weekend, which we'll talk about a little later. And I think one of the reasons I didn't do well is because I was expecting Standard to be stale. Mm-hmm. You know, I had tested like the big three. The big three were fine. You know, I felt good about vehicles. I felt good about Flash. I felt good about the mirror. And I just didn't expect to see anything else. And I ended up playing against four different archetypes in the four rounds of Standard. Two of which I had no practice against, almost no practice against. And I really think that was one of my shortcomings going into the weekend was that, you know, my practice experience was really stale because I was buying into what everybody was telling me and what I was simply being paired against randomly online. And I think the format is a lot more diverse than people give it credit for. And I certainly experienced that this past weekend.
Absolutely. And it was funny that Mardu Vehicles ended up winning at the hands of Matt Severa because it was a deck that we didn't even see coming into the weekend. Like, this was the weekend of weird decks and older decks in the format making a resurgence. And Mardu Vehicles was just quietly doing well until the finals, when it just completely ran over Aetherworks, which was supposed to be the big deck of the weekend.
Yeah, I wish I had faced more vehicles, because that was the one matchup. You know, they talk about Standard being sort of a rock, paper, scissors format where, you know, Delirium gets vehicles, which gets this, which gets that. And I was really hoping I faced vehicles because I felt very good about that matchup. And I didn't get that matchup at all. Mm-hmm. I didn't face it at all. And I really wish I would have, because, again, I think people kind of thought it was dead and gone. And, mm-hmm. you know, it obviously wasn't.
Right. And I think Thalia is a really good card in that matchup. Like, that mm-hmm. was the card that was instrumental in Severa's win in the end, because being able to ensure that Ishkanah and all the spiders come into play tapped, Emrakul's come into play tapped, all sorts of powerful blockers that keep that deck at bay just can't get up and block, you know. I think that's a really important card in this format.
Speaking of Thalia, I had the realization the other day that I have never played a deck that's happy to see her.
Like any of the incarnations?
I mean, Living End does not want to see her because Cascade costs one more. You know, Dredge certainly doesn't want to see her because we run so little lands. And even the new Thalia is pesky because all your blood gas come into play tapped. You know, when you're playing Reanimator, you know, you certainly can't reanimate as fast as you would like to. And I was just looking at both versions and I was like, I am never happy to see you. I look forward to the day where somebody can play a Thalia and I don't care, because every time she drops, I just kind of frown inside. And you were doing coverage this weekend. I know it had been a while since you had done that. So what was it like to get back to the grind?
I actually got back into it a lot faster than I was expecting to. And it was funny because I haven't played a whole lot of Standard, and I hadn't really played, you know, either of the big decks. So I wasn't really sure what this weekend was going to bring. And I just kind of hit the ground running on Friday night, as oddly as it sounds, even though I haven't done this in 6 months. And I set what I thought were really reasonable goals for myself. I wanted to write an article, you know, every 2 to 3 hours on Saturday. And then I wanted to do 2 deck techs before focusing on the top 8 on Sunday. And I hit all those goals pretty easily and had, you know, a bit of downtime where I could, you know, track down the winner of Simone's contest, or, you know, revisit someone who I had written about, like, at the last GP that I covered. So I actually felt like I managed my time really well. And a lot of doing coverage is not just, you know, writing well or creating content, you know, well, but it's how you manage your time. It's a very crucial component of it. So I felt like I managed my time so much better at this GP than I did at the last one, and I expect to manage it even better at the next one I go to.
Cool. And I want to talk about 2 of the articles that you had some input in. So the mm-hmm. first one, you did cover Simone Aiken mm-hmm. And her challenge to pay it forward. What was it like to meet her?
It was really cool. I really liked her, and she just struck me as a very wise person, like a very introspective person. And I noticed as she was talking to me that, you know, she chose her words very carefully. And I really respected that about her, because I also choose my words very carefully. And I really just enjoyed meeting her. She just seemed like a very generous, giving person. And I was just really happy to be able to share her story. The funny thing was, you know, she was very humble about it. And she said, oh, you know, you shouldn't make this about me. You should make this about, you know, the other women in the tournament. And while I did talk to some of the other women in the tournament, I really wanted to talk about Simone as well, because, like I said, she had so much wisdom to share. She had a lot of experience playing Magic competitively. And I thought her mindset was something that a lot of people could benefit from knowing about. I thought she had a very healthy mindset when it comes to playing Magic competitively. And so I encourage anyone who wants to improve at Magic to read that article and hear what she has to say about how to treat opponents, especially opponents who are famous, because I think people could really benefit from that.
And you also followed up with a superstar mm-hmm. in the making, if not superstar already, little Dana.
Yeah. So Dana Fisher is a 6-year-old girl that I first met at Grand Prix Los Angeles, which was the first GP I covered earlier this year. Her father, Adam, is a game designer, and he, sorry, I should, I, she's not a game designer. He works for a game company, and he's been in the gaming, industry for a while. But he's been teaching her how to play Magic, and he started teaching her how to play Magic when she was 3 years old, when she could barely read. And he has sort of been, you know, grooming her to be not necessarily a professional Magic player, but still a student of the game and someone for whom gaming is a priority in life. And so, I spoke to him about her at, GPLA. I wrote an article about her that was very widely shared. And I was really surprised when I walked into the venue on Friday and saw them just sitting at a table in the side events area. And I was just like, oh, it's so nice to see you guys here. What are you doing here? And, it turned out that, Dana had graduated from playing Two-Headed Giant side events with her dad to now playing in the main event by herself. And they gave her an assigned table. She was at the same table all day, and her dad got to sit next to her. They put her on the end so he could pull up a chair next to her. And she was really just like a beacon of brightness over the course of the whole weekend. Like, she was having such a good time. She came up to me on Sunday when I asked her, you know, how she did. And she was like, I won 2 rounds and I won 8 whole games. And I was like, oh, my God, that's so awesome. She high-fived me. She was so excited. And I'm just so glad that through writing articles, I've been able to build this relationship with this family, because her father, Adam, was telling me that Before I wrote this article about her, Magic was one of a bunch of games that she played. You know, she played board games, she played video games, she played Magic. They were a gaming family. Mm-hmm. So Magic was one of a bunch of things that she did. You know, she was, you know, a really active kid with a lot of extracurriculars. But now that I've written an article about her, and she was able to, like, print out that article and bring it to kindergarten and show her friends, now Magic has become her thing. Now she's practically a Magic celebrity, and she's really proud of that. And to be able to give that gift to someone, to allow someone to, you know, take pride in this thing that they do and feel good about this thing that they do, is just so gratifying for me. And I'm so glad that I was able to give that to her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love the so the tweet went out advertising the update of the article, and there were 4, I believe they were recent pictures of her.
Yeah, that was at the tournament this weekend.
They're all meme-worthy. Like, I was looking at those pictures, and I was looking at one of them, and it was like, you know, that feeling when your opponent doesn't understand how Phyrexian Unlife and Ad Nauseam works. And there's this picture of her, like, putting her head in her hands, and I was like, you could literally, I'm sure we could all take something we've experienced and find a Dana picture for it. Like, she's just perfect. And I, like you said, I just love her energy and her positivity. And 6 years old, mm-hmm. you know, I was just thinking about how fearless she is. You know, I was at the event this weekend, and sometimes, you know, when I go to a major events, I still feel like I'm going to puke. Like, I'm still, like, terrified to be there. And to just have that fearlessness of just going in there and maybe not understanding what's going on around you, but having that be for the better. Like, you're not thinking about it so much. You're just doing this thing that you love to do. And I was like, if I could just get a little of that back, like, And so it's really fantastic that you updated people on her progress.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Katie, you also played Magic this weekend.
Yeah, well, it was last weekend, but since we took a week off, I figured I could bring it on over. So I went home for Thanksgiving week, and I went back to my local game store and played FNM. And it was interesting, to say the least. So I played Standard, and beforehand, Brooke said that he was going to lend me Blue White Flash to play. So I kind of, like, looked up the deck and was, like, wondering about it. And then he got caught up with family stuff. And so, like, 5 minutes before the tournament, my friend Kobe was like, here, you can play this deck. And I was like, okay. I don't know why I researched all that stuff, but we'll go with this. So I played a blue white minus the blue. So it was like a white weenie style deck, but it was kind of more mid-range. But it still had Smuggler's Copter, Selfless Spirit, and then it played like Gideon, and then it had Archangel Avacyn, Thalia, and then like a host of removal spells. Just kind of like a solid mid-range deck, that was like white colorless. And round one, I played against a person who is super nice, and I've known him a long time. And he always plays brews. So we sit down, and he's playing like a four-color trample monster deck. I don't have a very good explanation for it.
That's some Chris Schultz shit right there.
It was straight up Chris's alley.
Ooh, now I want to know what was in it.
Well, it had that guy that enters and distributes the 4/1/1 counters on your creatures. And then it had the green guy where, like, depending on what colors of mana you tap, he gets that many +1/+1 counters when he came in. And then his removal spells were all based on, like, energy. So he was making energy and then just killing everything I had. And we had a fun three games, but I lost. And I was like, I'm still not really sure what's going on here, but that's okay. And then round two, I got a bye because we only had 9 people show up since it was Black Friday evening. And I played with a black-green Delirium deck against a few other decks, just to get a feel for how the deck worked since I haven't actually played Paper Magic in a while. And it was super solid feeling. Like, I really kind of enjoyed how it played out, and what it was all about. And then round three, I sat down against an opponent who was playing black-green Delirium. So that 50 minutes of testing really helped for me to know what I was doing. But we had a really close 3 games. I definitely made some mistakes, and I think I kept a hand that I shouldn't have, but, you know, for just playing a casual FNM, I wasn't too disappointed with anything. And then round 4, I played against some Chris Schultz shit again. What was and it? It was like a green-blue, kind of rampy defender deck that then played part the Water Veil and then gave all of his man lands flying and then just killed you after he took like multiple extra turns. I was just sat there and I was like, what is going on here? So there's a lot of jank in the room, but I still had fun. It's good to see my old stomping grounds. And I know they were doing a Saturday, standard showdown, which I think fired and went well. I didn't have time to go to that before I was leaving, but I'm hoping that when I go home in 2 weeks that I can play FNM while I'm there over the holidays. So it'll be good to kind of get back into the swing of things without school looming over me.
Oh, that's fantastic. I remember how close you were to your original community before you moved away. And I'm really glad that you were able to reconnect with that because, you know, it seems like you're really far away from them. And it seems like you really haven't, you know, been able to reestablish that where you are now.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So I played at the Invitational this past weekend, as I had mentioned, the Star City Games Invitational. I qualified back when you could still store points, and I top 8ed states a while back, and I had somehow accumulated enough points to qualify. It's funny because I remember when I first got the email telling me I qualified, I didn't believe them. So like I'd sent them an email, and I was like, there must be a mistake. I was like, I don't qualify for things. And they were like, no, you really did. And I was like, no, you don't understand. Like, I don't qualify for things. I was like, that is not my role on my show. It is not my role in life. I know my purpose. I stay in my lane. And he was like, no, you have an invite. And I was like, oh, hell. So I figured I might as well go. I really kind of went largely for the experience. You know, I had no delusions about doing well. I knew that I wasn't going to crush it. I had hoped to do better than I did. I ended up going 0-4 in the standard portion. I'm not really sure what happened. I was taking Green Black Delirium, which people thought was a really good deck. I was really concerned that Marvel was going to come back because I was seeing a lot of articles about it in the week leading up to the Invitational. And in my experience, that's sort of an indicator of where the metagame is headed. I remember when we went to GP Indianapolis and everybody was writing about Bant Eldrazi, the week before the GP, and then Bant Eldrazi had a really big weekend. And so going forward, I've started to learn that if I really want to kind of know where the metagame is going, to sort of pay attention to what people are talking about, because that's usually where it's going to go. And so I had a feeling that Marvel was going to show out because everybody was talking about it. I was already locked into my deck choice, though, so I couldn't go back. It was like, we're on Delirium, and Marvel's terrible for me, but if I face it, oh, well, I'll face it and we'll move on. I faced Marvel the first round, and of course it swept me. The second round, I faced Thermal Alchemist Burn. Which was really pesky. It was literally like 8 turns of Chandra. Like Chandra's plus one, where you can refuse to cast the spell and then I just get shocked for 2. Yeah, that card did work. So when you have 2 Thermal Alchemists in that card, it's very painful. So I got beat by Thermal Alchemist Burn. I did end up facing the mirror, a very nice young man from Tennessee, in the mirror. And then lastly, I faced Blue White Flash, which I felt confident about. And I didn't do as well as I had hoped. And I was really dejected by the time I went into Modern and I had decided to take Ad Nauseam. And the first opponent I play in the Modern portion is on Dredge. Oh. Mm-hmm. And it was like his first time playing Dredge. And he was like, yeah, I know who you are. I play Dredge. And I'm like, oh. And it's like, it's one of those moments where it's like, that's one of those moments that tells me I should drop, where it's like, you're 0-4 and you lost to your own deck, the deck that you tell everybody to play. I was like, you need to just go now. So I dropped at that point and, I enjoyed my clawfoot tub that we had in our Airbnb. Came back the next day and played a lot of Legacy. I played in a lot of Legacy side events, played a lot of Reanimator, got a couple of turn one Sire of Insanities off, a couple turn one Grizzlebrands, had a lot of fun with that. The last day was the Modern Classic, which I finished 4-4. I have a very soul-crushing bad beat story if you'd like to hear it.
Of course.
Yes.
All right. Bring so last round of the Modern Classic, I'm 4-3. I really want a 5-3. I'm facing a young man playing Jund. Game one, he makes a miraculous comeback. He mulls to 5, draws land, draws their confidant, and comes back very quickly. Meanwhile, I have 10 mana and can't find the other half of my combo, like you do. Game two, I'm feeling good. I've got Leyline of Sanctity, got Lotus Bloom, 3 lands, combo in hand, 1 counter on the bloom, I'm home free. Nothing can go wrong. I have an extra card in hand in case Liliana drops, discard, we're good. There's nothing that can go wrong. So he untaps, and I'm thinking, I've got this, I've got this. He slams down Blood Moon. Mm-hmm. Why is Jund playing Blood Moon? Jund is supposed to hate Blood Moon. And so I looked at him and I was like, why are you playing Blood Moon? And I don't think he heard me. And he's like, yeah, Blood Moon's been doing a lot of work. All day. He's like, no, really. Why are you playing Blood Moon? And he's like, oh, I just don't like losing to certain decks. And I was like, it was perfect. It was perfect. It was like that scene in Legally Blonde when Elle and her and Warner go to that beautiful restaurant and she's looking great and he's like, I think we should see other people. Like, that was me. I was Elle Woods. Why do I keep being Elle Woods? I don't know, but I was just, everything was perfect. And then he slammed a Blood Moon and I had nothing and I was just devastated. So I ended up finishing 4-4. The previous round I played a very sweet trans lady named Abigail. She was on Scred Red. Everybody I played was really nice for the most part. It was just a really kind of disappointing weekend. Like, I just didn't do as well as I thought. Atlanta wasn't as nice as I thought it would be. It rained a lot. There were some major sporting events going on, so transportation was very difficult. I had a lot of fun rooming with Mrs. Mulligan, though, so if you ever get a chance to room with her, you should really do that because she's very sweet. And yeah, the next event we have coming up is GP Milwaukee, and then I'm probably going to Louisville, and that's about it. So I'm just hoping to kind of come back from this because this weekend was, I just haven't really been hitting. I feel like I've been having these moments of, like I have these streaks where it's like I will go, like in the Modern Classic, I started off 3-0, and then I feel like I use up all of my karma or I use up all my good fortune, and then I lost the next 3. And I felt like that was a good indicator of my weekend, of like I would have amazing game ones, or I'd have amazing, and then I would crash and burn. And so it just felt very giveth and taketh away, and I just look forward to kind of getting out of that loop because it's very, very depressing. Like, I'd rather just have consistency, not these spikes and then these crashes. And I just don't know how to deal with that.
I hear that.
So, yeah. So Chris, speaking of, you know, the ups and downs, you know, you found a really great article about fear and beating fear in Magic, playing without fear. So tell us about this.
Yeah, it really resonated with me. It was an article by Will Jonathan from Channel Fireball. And he touches on something at the beginning of the article where it's very, like, sports-related, where you talk about playing without fear. And he talks about how fear is a mindset that you can easily break out of if you try to follow steps to go toward that direction. And so he kind of lays it out with 5 different steps that you can do to combat playing with fear. The first one is to play the matchup and not the opponent. And I never really thought about it that way before. I guess I've always, not that I'm scared of certain opponents, but just that you get, even at like larger tournaments, you kind of just get that feeling of you're looking at this person, they're there, and maybe you're thinking more about them than what their deck is. And so he suggests ignoring who your opponent is and start caring about the cards that they're actually casting. Care about the lines of play so you're not putting yourself in a position where you're so wrapped up in who they are or what they're about that you're not focusing on what's actually going on in the game. The second point that he made was stop being afraid of losing. And that's really hard for me to do because I try to always go into it with like, we're just going to YOLO. And if things work out, that's great. But I feel like if I start doing well, then I feel like that fear creeps back in and I'm like, well, you're doing so well now. Something's just bound to happen. That's wrong. And he suggests that, you know, you should think of losing and failure are an inevitable thing. You're not always going to succeed at everything. You're not always going to win. And I think that I want to adopt that strategy when I start doing well to be like, okay, you might not win this next one, but you need to go into it with a better mindset. And he also suggests that fear of losing is a weakness that increases your probability of losing. So if you're focused so much on being scared of losing, you probably will lose because you're so wrapped up in those feelings. And so that's definitely something that I need to personally work on. He also brings up play to have a great game, not to avoid a bad one. And I feel like that's something else I do not particularly do well. He suggests playing for the sake of having a great game. And I'm usually just so focused on, like, let's not lose that I'm not even thinking about, like, how great the game could be, focusing on my lines of play. And I really took that one to heart, especially. And he says, you know, if you focus on playing for the sake of having a great game, you'll play more boldly, more courageously, more confidently. You're more willing to take risks and willing to go for the win when it presents itself. Because sometimes I'll hold back and I'll be like, oh, I could maybe win now, but what if they have this? And then I just kind of like choke for a second. And it, you know, even, you know, this last week at FNM, I'm like, you know, I'm just going to go off Escape Shift. There's Counterspell. I don't give a fuck. And, you know, it's like, I'll try to cast it again. You know, if it's remanded, big deal. And so I feel like I need to, me personally, work on going for the win more if I see that, yes, this is my opportunity that I'm going to take advantage of it. And then also he suggests to play great because that will build your confidence. And that is also something that I personally feel I need to work on is I have been more confident while playing, but I still feel like I need to work on that just a little bit more. The fourth point he makes is most fears are irrational. And you have to realize that they are completely irrational. And he talks about how your brain is just designed to survive. You know, it puts you in a situation where it's like, okay, well, you know, you got to figure out a way out of this. And so your brain starts thinking, oh, if you don't win this game, you'll be a laughingstock. Or if you don't place well, that means you're a bad player. And I think that sometimes I'm like, oh man, if I don't do this well, what are people going to think? And am I going to be the loser in the car on the ride home or something? And I need to get past that as well. And you can combat that by reminding yourself that the fear it generates, that your brain generates, is irrational and just unfounded. And he says a specific quote that I really appreciate. Not playing well in a tournament doesn't mean you'll never be good enough. And that's one thing that I've tried to keep telling myself is maybe someday you'll be better. Right now is maybe not that time, but you're working your way towards this goal. Even if I look at myself 4 or 5 years ago when I started playing, and it's like a massive difference. So obviously things can change, but you have to be in the right mindset to definitely do that. And the last point he makes is surrounding yourself with people who make you feel good. And that is something that I always try to do. You should surround yourself with ambitious, driven, emotionally uplifting people. I think I absolutely do that. I would hate to be part of a testing group or a team that did not believe in each other and in themselves, because that just seems like someone's the weakest link and then you're going to fail. And
goodbye.
Basically. And he asked the question, in relation to these people that you surround yourself with, are they holding you down or are they lifting you up? And that is one thing that I have talked about in the show, that I've talked about in my personal life, is, are the people you're friends with, surrounding yourself with in any way, are they help build you up or are they help breaking you down? And I've talked about my store and how we have a great support system. And so I feel like that is definitely something I've done well, is I've surrounded myself with friends, fellow players, my co-hosts, you know, people that are encouraging me to be better and that I feel like I can encourage them to be better as well. And so I think that anyone that's having any kind of struggle with fear of playing the game or of various decks or opponents or anything can look at these 5 points that he makes and maybe start trying to build a better perspective of how they want to handle playing the game or tackling, you know, any issue, I guess you could use, you know, with these examples. So I really, really, really enjoyed reading his article, and I thought that it brought up many good points and just was awesome. And after reading the whole thing, I actually came back to something that my friend Cash Turner told me in Atlanta when I asked him how he gets through all these different games. And he's like, you just take it one game at a time. And that is another thing that I'm going to try to adopt, is trying to erase my fears and try to put them off to the side, focus on the game, and just take it one game at a time.
Yeah, that's really stellar advice. Hallie and Katie, can you relate to anything from Will's article?
So much of it. Mm-hmm. So much of it. I've actually been following Will Jonathan's article series on Channel Fireball since he started it in September. So I was actually really glad that Chris brought this up, because I've wanted to talk about his articles for a while now. And there were a lot of quotes and a lot of pieces of advice that he gave in this article that resonated with me. The point that he makes about playing the matchup and not the opponent is exactly the point that Simone Aiken was making when I interviewed her over the weekend. And so it was funny to read this article and hear that same point echoed back to me again. And that is something that I try to keep in mind, because I'm someone who occasionally gets intimidated by pro players. I have a funny story about something that happened to a friend of mine. My friend Jordan is not a competitive Magic player. I think he's a pretty solid Magic player. But he went to Grand Prix Vancouver with me earlier in the year because he just likes to play limited, and he thought it would be fun, and he likes visiting Vancouver. So he was having a really great run. He had a strong deck. He, you know, was doing really well and was on track to make day two. And in the eighth round of the day, we were kind of teasing him and saying, like, oh, you're going to start facing some really tough opponents now. And he looked at the online pairings and he said, oh, who's Alexander Hayne? And I started laughing and I said, he's probably the best Magic player in Canada. And Jordan's face just went white and he lost that match. He lost that match. But in round 9, he played against Raphael Levy and he had no idea who he was. And he won the match convincingly. So when you don't know who your opponent is, or when you don't think about who they are or what who they are means to you, then you're just playing against a person. I mean, that's all you're doing. You're playing against another player. You're playing a 75-card deck against another 75-card deck, just like Will Jonathan says in his article. And that's all you really need to worry about. The other thing I want to bring up is the idea of playing to have a great game, not to avoid a bad one. That's something that I'm actively trying to work on. And another, I guess, anecdote I can give that support, you know, to, you know, talk about this is that I was going through a losing streak for a while. I guess earlier this year, I was not doing well. I was putting a lot of pressure on myself to do well in tournaments, and all that pressure was really weighing on me, and it was affecting how I was playing. I felt like, you know, I had to do well because suddenly I was, you know, getting a reputation for being a good player, and people were looking up to me and asking me for deck advice. And every time I lost, I would have these instances of imposter syndrome where I would think, oh, why are these people asking me for deck advice? Why am I writing articles? I'm not that good. And I think a lot of it was that I was focusing on winning. You know, winning was the thing I was there to do, when all along, Magic has just been a game that I've enjoyed. Like, that's why everyone plays the game, because it's fun. And when you focus so much on winning and pushing yourself, I mean, pushing yourself to do better to a certain degree is healthy, but when you're so consumed with having to win all your matches, it's just impossible. It's impossible to live up to those expectations. So one thing I started asking Robert to do was, you know, he texts me at the beginning of the day when I go to a tournament. You know, when I wake up on Saturday morning for a GP, I wake up to a text from him. And for a while, that text would say, you know, good morning, crush your enemies, you know, crush it today, win all your matches, whatever. And after a while of getting those texts from him, I said, you know, instead of texting me that, could you just text me, have fun? Because that's what I think I need to hear when I wake up in the morning to play in a tournament. Have fun. Like, that's what I really need to be focusing on. So that's my piece of advice, I guess. Ask your friends to text you to have fun or tell you to have fun before you start playing, because I find that I play better when I'm having fun, and I think that's probably true for a lot of people.
Yeah, I actually had to do the same thing with Anthony and taking tests at school. He'd be like, I know you're going to slay him. And I was like, could you just say, like, try to pass, or like something with less expectations, because I just need lower expectations right now. So that's definitely applicable to many things in life. I really liked, like, everything in this article. The last part, especially where he says, you know, are they holding you down or are they lifting you up? And Chris mentioned that, but it's like, for me, I think a lot of people don't, like, examine their friend group or their playtest group, and they kind of just get into a rhythm and it's comfortable and you're going along with it. And sometimes it can take something like, you know, some introspection on your part to look at it and say, like, are these people supporting me? Because I feel like a lot of people get trapped in this loop of, like, this is my comfort zone, these are my people. But when you look at it at the end of the day, sometimes just because it's comfortable doesn't mean it's the best thing for you in that group. And that's not to say that the people are awful or anything, but it might just not be a very great fit. And when I first got into the Magic community back in Bozeman, I made some friends and kind of started, you know, going along. And then after a while, kind of when I got into the podcast and started doing a lot more self-reflection, I guess, I realized, like, some of these people are not really who I want to be surrounding myself with. But it took so long to get to that point. And then I'd be like, well, you know, if they're going to act like this or do these things that bother me, I'm just not going to surround myself with them any longer. And then I changed playtesting groups, and everything kind of got back to the part where I felt like people were lifting me up instead of, and it wasn't even like I felt like they were holding me down. It just felt like a very minor negative, like, balance. Like, I wasn't really on the positive side of the scale, and I wasn't tipped all the way towards the negative, but it definitely wasn't just like a neutral place in my life. And so I feel like there is the potential for things to improve, even if you don't realize that things are awful. Like, nothing has to be awful for it to be improvable, I guess. And then another thing, we've talked about people, especially women, who feel like they're playing a game of Magic, and if they lose, all women in Magic are going to look bad, and their loss is going to be, you know, taken as all women in Magic are bad. And it's so funny because I've had people come up to me who are like, do you remember that time you were playing for top 8 and you made that really good play against so-and-so and you did this and then you won? And I'm just like, no, no, I don't remember that. They're like, oh, well, that was really cool. And it's kind of funny to realize that it's like having a negative interaction with a person. you know, like an acquaintance or something, you remember that negative interaction so well in your mind, but you don't remember all of the positive ones that led up to that one or that came after that one. And I feel like that's how losses in Magic are. Like, if you think about how many games or matches you win versus how many you actually lose that really bum you out, the ratio is, like, pretty staggering for most people. I mean, most of the time you play a game, you win, you have fun, you move on. And then there's always that one loss that's like, oh, I got this bad beat story. Everybody saw that. But if you think about all the different times that you've won, they add up to be so much more than just that one negative loss. And so I think it's really important to remember when you're trying to get over your fear of losing and all these things that might be holding you back, that think about what you accomplished getting up to that point. Say you are playing for a top eight and you went 5-1 and now you're playing like your last round and maybe you lose and you don't make the winning in, but you won 5 rounds, like probably against skilled people or whoever it may be, you know, and that's something to be proud of no matter how that loss went. And so I think it's important to remember when you're trying to get over this fear that your losses don't make up who you are. They're just a component of it, just like the wins are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I related to this post in a very different way. You know, one of the popular decks that I like to play in is Dredge, obviously, and there's a specific kind of Dredge in Legacy called Fearless Dredge. And the theory behind Fearless Dredge is that you don't run any anti-hate. So you don't run Nature's Claim, you don't run Abrupt Decay, you don't have anything for a Grafdigger's Cage or a Rest in Peace. You are basically saying to your opponent, this is what I'm going to do. You either have something or I'm coming for you. And it's very common nowadays for people to run all of those things. And even in Modern for a while, you know, for when the list first started getting refined, like by people like Ross Merriam and MTG Mint Card, you didn't really see a lot of sideboard hate or anti-hate. And then all of a sudden people started really loading up on it. And, you know, even if you look at some of the legacy lists now, they're running like 4 Lotus Petals and 4 Eruptices and 3 Nature's Claims. And the theory behind Fearless Dredge is you're basically, you know, there's some theory behind it in terms of like this, the variables, you know, are they likely to have the hate and are you likely to have the answer and all that stuff. But there's also the psychological aspect of you free yourself from the fear. You know, when you play a deck like Affinity or a Dredge deck, we put so much emphasis on the hate cards. What if they have Stony Silence? What if they have Rest in Peace? What if they have Leyline of the Void? We invest so much in those cards. And in the reverse, we also invest so much in our anti-hate where, oh my God, I've got a Nature's Claim. What could possibly go wrong? You know, kind of going back to my ad nauseum story, I was so confident because I had that turn zero Leyline of Sanctity, I didn't think anybody could touch me. And then when the opponent had something, it was crushing. And so when you play Fearless Dredge, you are freeing yourself of that. You are saying, if you draw that one copy of Grafdigger's Cage and you're 75, God bless you, whatever. You know, you scoop it up and you go. You know, you just don't put so much fear into that card. And likewise, you don't put so much faith in those anti-hate cards because what if you don't draw them? What if you still lose to Grafdigger's Cage? And I feel like when I freed myself from the fear, I also took my losses better too. And it was just a really freeing feeling. And that's a lot of the reason why I like playing that style of deck is because I just got tired of being afraid. I got tired of investing so much of my emotions into these cards and then not having the games go the way that I want to. And so that's what I really took out of this deck. And, you know, when I'm playing Dredge, you know, another theory behind Fearless Dredge is they tell you stay scary. Mm-hmm. Because when you give into that and you pack your deck full of Nature's Claims, you are giving into that. You are admitting that you are not that scary. And I want to be scary. I want to be the boogeyman. So I free myself of all of that and I say just fucking bring it. And so I feel like the games are more enjoyable that way. And so that's sort of my relationship, with fear and Magic is just sort of letting it go.
Nice.
So. Also, Chris, so while we have you here, you have a bit of a challenge for our listeners, and I believe you are inspired by something you saw on MTG Goldfish. So what are you proposing exactly?
So I am proposing a no fear challenge. So, yes, and I'll make sure to have full details available after this episode releases. However, what I am trying to do is issue a challenge to our fans to build and pilot a deck that has either caused you some kind of stress or self-doubt or just seems super scary. Maybe a deck you never thought you would ever play. And it's not like I'm going to be safe from this because I'm going to do it too. I have actually been like super freaked out about ever piloting Amulet Titan. And I decided that I'm going to take it upon myself to get the rest of the cards for the deck, throw it together, and give it a try. So my challenge is going to run from December 9th, so the day this episode will come out, until February 3rd of next year. So within that time, I encourage people to build a deck for any constructed format and then follow up with me with a deck report at the email address that I use for the show and detail, you know, to me some specific answers about how your challenge went. And so I will definitely include some more details, like I said, later, so you can kind of see if this might be for you. But I really would like people to participate in it. I don't care if you live in Tajikistan, Australia, the U.S., Great Britain, wherever. This is international, yo. So whoever wants to participate, please do. There will be prizes involved.
Sweet prizes.
Yes. And I promise they will be super dope. So if you are interested, please, please, please check out our page for Gathering Magic, social media, stuff like that, and they'll have more details about it. But I really would like people to participate and challenge themselves to do something that they've never done before or pile a deck that seems scary. I mean, hell, I remember watching Justin Cohen play this deck, and I was like, what? I could never. So we're going to do it, fam, together. We're going to build decks, and we're going to show ourselves who's boss.
Nice.
I think I'm actually going to join you in this, Chris. You know, now that I'm streaming fairly regularly, I think I might try out a couple of decks too. And I you know, one of them might be Burn. If we're doing the fear thing, you know, we need to, I think that's the one I have to try because I hate Burn. We all know I have a very complicated relationship with Burn. I refuse to hang up the mountain on my wall in protest. I have not dated people because they play Burn. I have a very deep relationship to the deck. And so I think if we're going to play fearless, if we're going to say playing without fear, maybe I need to just get over that issue and play Burn, I think.
Can I be on that stream? Can I
join you? You can absolutely join. Twitch.tv/originalastress. I will let you know.
You should totally do it.
Yeah, or maybe just a couple of decks. You know, I've never played, I can think of a couple decks. I definitely have some, decks that I never thought I could possibly do, or decks that I don't understand, or decks that I just plain don't like. And so, I think I could definitely do that. Your deck looks like fun, Chris. Every time I see Titan Shift, I've always wanted to play Rugscape Shift. So I think if I were to try that, I think that's what I would want to do.
Yeah, do it. Bring it to Light is like the shit. So you should definitely do
it. I just, cause I'm always afraid I'm going to screw up Valakut, and
I always do. Join the club.
Just assume that they think they're dead. That's how it works.
That's how I played it.
I just want to kill somebody with a Farsi, because I had somebody do that to me where I was like at two and they were like, Farsi? Mm-hmm. And I'm like,
it feels so
good.
Oh,
so that means you get a land, and if it's a... Okay, I'm dead.
Love it.
That sounds like fun. So I hope people take you up on it.
Me too.
Before we go, either Revolt spoilers have started coming out. We now know what a couple of the cards in the set are going to be. And we also saw a video that was posted that kind of gives us a little bit of information about the either Revolt pre-release. I believe there are going to be banners. And this kind of feels like, am I the only one getting like a Les Mis vibe from all of this? I'm the only one, aren't I?
Love it.
Okay. Well, just the way they're selling it, you know, they're selling it as sort of the, you know, the consulate has sort of taken all these inventions and they're establishing curfews and they're depriving these people of the right to create and to invent, which is sort of the thrust of the realm or the plane. And the people are sort of rebelling and there's this resistance and they are defacing all of the consulate banners. And so it really is turning into sort of an us versus them thing. And, I think this is wonderful. Like, I really like this storyline from what I've seen of it so far. We have a couple of spoilers, which, you can find on Mythic Spoiler. .com, which is my go-to site. We have a new Ajani, which is green and white, who looks amazing. We have a new Planeswalker in the dual deck. I believe it's Ajani versus Tezzeret. Tezzeret, Master of Metal. And somebody has already photoshopped a guitar in his hand. So he literally is the master of metal now. We also have the, there's a Planes. Okay. So there's the Planeswalker Dex, which are standard legal. There's an Ajani in that one and a Tezzeret, and there's a different Ajani in the actual set. Both of them seem pretty nifty. A couple of other cards, Heart of Kieran, Yeheni's Expertise, Trophy Mage, Scrap Trawler, and Quicksmith Rebel. What do you guys think of the set so far from the 5 to 7 cards we've seen so far?
I'm hype. I'm super hype.
Me too.
I'm just sad that it's called Heart of Kieran and it just makes me want to cry now. I'm just like...
It makes me think of the Taylor Dayne song, like Heart of Stone. Of course, I'm really old. I'm sorry.
I love it. It seems like it would be like a really powerful card. And I like to see that Kieran's getting some more love even post-death. So I think that's pretty awesome. And also, I think that Trophy Mage card looks pretty cool. It's very reminiscent of, like, Trinket Mage and Treasure Mage. And, of course, my love for Blutron knows no bounds. So that it definitely made me think of that. Like, I saw it last night, and I was like, oh, shit. It's like some Trinket Mage shit. Like, that's pretty awesome. So I'm down with that card. And I just really hope for more sweet cards. Kaladesh was so amazing that I hope that Aether Revolt is more of the same. And I like that Yeheni is getting some love in that card too, because I was very impressed with their character in the Magic story. So,
how good was that story though?
So good.
Oh my God. Allison Lures. The first paragraph of the story is like, I want someone to be with me when I die. And I'm like, oh my God, Allison. I was like, you can at least ease us into this. I was like, you can't start with this. Like, I felt like I'd been punched in the gut. And then the story ends up getting a little more positive, but just having that be the opening, I was like, Jesus Christ. I was like, I need a minute just from the first line. Like,
I am also hyped.
Yeah. Yeah. I looked at the -3/-3 for all creatures. And I was like, why are you not just a board wipe? Why can't I just have my supreme verdict and live in peace? I've been waiting for a real board wipe for a while now. So I saw a post by the professor that was like, why can't we all just live in peace? Why can't there be like 3 magic sets where it starts off and then the plane improves and then it improves again and everybody's just happy? And he was kind of sad about how happy the first set was and how like bright and colorful the artwork was. And he was like, and now it's just things are going to shit. and I was kind of that same way. I was like, oh, it feels like a little bit of a downer, but yeah, I don't know. I'm not necessarily excited yet, but I think that these cards mean that it'll have potential and that I'll be excited later on. It's certainly a lot of artifacts and I've never been like a huge on artifacts person, so we'll see how it goes. But it's looking like it'll be a fun set regardless.
Okay, so there was a card that just got spoiled on Twitter that I know you three are going to love.
Is it a
I'm going to read
wipe?
It to you. No, but it's wipe? Up your alley. Okay, the card is called Disallow. It's blue.
Mm-hmm.
Deep
already
breaths.
Sold.
Deep breath. It costs 1 colorless and 2 blue. It is an instant. Counter target spell, comma, activated ability, comma, or triggered ability.
Holy shit. That's amazing.
What?
Standard is getting a stifle, y'all.
What?
Oh my God. I've always wanted a standard stifle.
It's happening. And the art is badass. There's somebody who appears to be giving like a really sassy arm, walking through some fire. It's beautiful. I just retweeted it. And yeah, people are pretty hype. So Blue Mages, you're going to love that card.
Yes.
I'm actually... Chris needs to take a deep breath.
Yeah, that was pretty hot. Like, wow.
Do we need to pause so you can get a cigarette? Like, is it that good?
I think it just might be. I'm very impressed. Thank you, Wizards.
It's like Nisandra all over again.
Nisandra, hello. I'm actually really excited about Aether Revolt too. You know, part of the reason I didn't like Kaladesh is I admit it was a little too happy for me. You know, I didn't necessarily want to go back to Innistrad. Like, I didn't want mono darkness and mono dead things and mono tentacles. But, you know, even Return to Ravnica had a little bit of what I call stank on it. You know, everybody wasn't walking around holding hands and, you know, the guilds weren't, you know, singing kumbaya or anything. There was still a little bit of conflict there. Ravnica is still a beautiful plane, but there was still sort of that underbelly on the plane, which I really enjoyed. And it just felt like, you know, the initial set of Kaladesh just didn't have that. It was like all happy all the time, all colors all the time. And on the one hand, I understand that we really needed that from where we had come from, but that just wasn't really my scene. Like, it was just a little too shiny. And so, you know, the fact that there is sort of this darkness now where the consulate is kind of taking over, they are passing all of these laws and the people are unhappy. You know, I like that. I think the conflict is great for the story. It certainly makes things more interesting. I'm more interested in the set now that there's a little bit of conflict. And so, I'm excited to see what cards come from this. I really like Yeheni as a character. I've heard Yeheni is getting a card. So hopefully that card is awesome. I think Yeheni's expertise also really plays into the lore. In Yeheni's story, spoiler alert, they discover that they have the ability to drain life from people. So the Etherborn are on very short clocks. They don't live for very long. But Yeheni is able to steal life from animals and people and extend their clock. And so Yeheni kind of struggles with that through the story, and they decide they want to use that power for good. So, you know, the flavor of it, of killing things and then using that energy that you get from killing things to create and make good things. So you're doing the -3/-3, and then you get to play something. I really thought that was a big flavor win. Especially if you've read the story, it really does make sense, because there were some people who saw that and were like, that's really random. And if you read the story, it does make very good sense. And so I'm really excited. I really love the Heart of Kieran. I love the idea of using loyalty as sort of a currency where you can, you know, take a loyalty counter off to pay for the crew costs. I think that's really dope. Mm-hmm. And it's something we really don't get to see very much of. You know, loyalty is a very static ability. And so I'm really excited for this. I love the idea of the banners at the pre-release, the video that they showed. Was part of the Wizards Play Network, so they're encouraging stores to like cultivate this resistance vibe and, you know, make your store look like a base or a shelter, and I thought that was really dope. And so I'm really looking forward to this set, and I hope that there's some new toys, and certainly if it keeps standard fresh, I'm all for it. So anything else on our minds before we wrap up the show?
I had something.
You do.
I wanted to give a shout out to my friend David, who qualified for his first Pro Tour yesterday.
Wow. Awesome.
That's exciting.
So David is one of my main playtesting partners here in Seattle. He's been playing Magic for a while. He was fairly active in the Ann Arbor, Michigan scene when he was in college, and still keeps in touch with people like Kyle Bogamus and Mac McCullough and other, you know, players from that area. And he's been trying to qualify for the Pro Tour for a while now, and coming really close where, you know, he would win a PPDQ, but he would go to the RPDQ and things just wouldn't break his way. But he finally got to the point where he was chaining invites where he would top 8 the RPTQ and lose the quarterfinal match, but because he got that far, he got an invite to the next one, and he just worked his tail off, like, practicing Modern for months and months preparing for this, and it really paid off. And I have to say, like, seeing him succeed like that is an inspiration to me, because he's someone that I really admire, because he is a deck builder, and I'm not really a deck builder, so I admire that he can build decks pretty competently. But the thing I really like about him is that, unlike a lot of players I know who, you know, get really attached to their brew, and, you know, they'll build this deck and they'll take it to a tournament, and it won't work out, and they can't bring themselves to critically look back and say, you know, okay, maybe I need to change some things, or okay, maybe this isn't working. The thing I really like about David is that if he's testing a brew and it's not working for him, he will just put it aside and say, okay, I need something else. And fortunately, he has a network of people who can provide him with other decks, and he'll treat those decks like they're his own and just do everything he can to learn how to play them as well as he can in time for the tournament. So I just have to give major props to him. I hope he does amazingly on the Pro Tour. I'm probably going to be helping him prepare for the limited portion of that, since he's primarily a constructed player. And I really hope he does well.
Cool.
Yeah, so Chris and I will be at GP Milwaukee this weekend. So if you are in the area, please come say hi to us. We will have hugs and a couple of stickers, hopefully, to hand out. Our friend Jess Buchanan will be in town from Canada, so she will be there tearing it up. And hopefully we'll see some folks there. It's sure to be a good time. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. You can also find me on Snapchat and Instagram at HalCanSan. And if you'd like to read any of the articles that I wrote this weekend, head over to Daily MTG and check out the GP Denver coverage.
And I'm Katie. I also wanted to give a shout out to Brooke for passing his team lead requirement for his L3 grind. He's been going to so many GPs this year. I couldn't even list them all, but one of the requirements for L3 is you have to team lead and you have to have somebody observing you. So he had an L3 now. It used to be L5, observing him, and said that he passed with flying colors. So props to him on his journey there. You can find me on Twitter at Mean Mugger. That's MeanMugger, or on Snapchat, katie.neil14, or on Twitch, twitch.tv/meanmuggermtg.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at THKRIZ. My Gmail is yothkriz@gmail.com. My blog is backtablesmtg.wordpress.com. And I do have a new post coming soon. I'm just putting the finishing touches on it. Please find me on Snapchat if you'd like to, Cryptic Command with K's. And as Aaron said, we will be at the GP in Milwaukee this weekend. So please come and say hi. I love meeting new people. Yay.
Yay. And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at OriginalAstrus. That's OriginalAstrus. You can email me at OriginalAstrus@gmail.com. I stream every Tuesday and Thursday night starting at 8:30 p.m. Central Time at twitch.tv/OriginalAstrus. The show comes out every Friday at GatheringMagic.com. You can find us on Twitter at the GF Bracket. And you can email us at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening to us, and we will talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.